Jai Radha Krishna Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Yidhi Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Mathura Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai Gangamaya Jivana Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai Gaur Premananda All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Varanga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Hitanami Namaskar Saraswati Vandana Bhutani Vasasi Sukhavasakavi Sukhavi. Mandeham Sri Guru Sri Utah Padakamalam Sri Guru and Vaishnavam. Shri Rupam, Sakrajan, Tam, Sahana, Ravanakam, Vikam, Sam, Sajivam, Sadvaikam, Sandhudukam, Padijina, Sahika, Krishna, Chaitanya, Devam, Shri Radha, Krishna, Padam, Sahana, Lavita, Shri Vishakam, Vikam, Shah, and Chapati, Vishaki, Vasindhi, Vitapati, Jana, Pami, and Vikam, Shri Vishaki, the camera does not seem to be working.
No, nothing seems to be working.
Nothing's working.
What's that? Nothing's working.
Nothing's
working. People are telling me I can't get anything.
That means I'm probably getting, yes, I'm getting lots.
So
if you want
to, I'm on board.
Yeah, I noticed that also.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So it's July 19, 2021 in Hillsborough, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 27, Text 5. That's what's up on the board there. That's it. Kutomita Dvedava Ishita Krita Loba Dayo Ye Gura Linga Baba Tadapi Dandam Bhagavan Devarti Dharma Sahupya Ekala Nirgrahaya. Who's chanting? Oh, okay.
It's simple, it was just unplugged.
Okay. Kutaha. How?
New.
Certainly. Tat. Of that existence of the material body. Edavaha. The causes. Isha. O Lord. Takritaha. Produced by one's connection with the material body. Loba Adaiha. Greed and so forth. Yea, which Adbuddha of an ignorant person. Linga Bhavaha. Symptoms. Tatapi.
Nevertheless.
Dandam. Punishment. Bhagavan. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vibharti. Wheels, Dharmasya, of the principles of religion, Gutyai, for the protection, Kala, of wicked persons, Nigrahaya, for the chastisement. Translation, UBT. How then could there exist in you the symptoms of an ignorant person? Such as greed, lust, anger, and envy. Of course, the Sanskrit just said greed and so forth. Which are produced by one's previous involvement in material existence, and which cause one to become further entangled in material existence. And yet, as a Supreme Lord, you impose punishment to protect religious principles and curb down the wicked. So here Indra is speaking of a paradox. Purport. It's a little long. This complex philosophical statement by Indra may be analyzed as follows. In the first line of this verse, Indra refers to the main idea expressed at the end of the previous verse, namely that the great currents of material existence, which are based on ignorance, cannot possibly exist within the Supreme Lord. The words tat vedava and tat kritaha indicate that something causes the modes of nature to manifest, and that they, in turn, become the cause of that which caused them. In the second line of this verse, we find that it is material feelings, such as greed, lust, envy, and anger, that cause the modes of nature to manifest, and that are themselves caused by the modes of nature. The explanation of the seeming paradox is as follows. When the conditioned soul decides to associate with material qualities, he becomes contaminated by those qualities, as stated in Gita 13:22. For example, in the presence of a seductive woman, a man may give in to his lower instincts and try to enjoy sex with her. By his deciding to associate with the lower qualities of nature, those qualities manifest in him very powerfully. He is overwhelmed with lust and driven to try again and again to satisfy his burning desire. Because his mind is infected by lust, all that he does, thinks, and seeks will be influenced by his strong attachment to sex. In other words, by choosing to associate with the lusty qualities of nature, he has caused them to powerfully manifest within himself, and eventually those lusty qualities themselves will cause him to accept another material body suitable for affairs governed by those qualities. The lower qualities such as lust, greed, anger, and envy are adhuta linga bhavaha, symptoms of ignorance. Adhuta, without intelligence, linga is a sign, bhavaha is nature. So these are the signs of the nature of ignorance. Indeed, as indicated by Srila Sridhar Swami in his commentary, the manifestation of the modes of nature is synonymous with the manifestation of a particular material body. In other words, each of the bodies that we have is a particular combination of the modes of nature. It is clearly explained throughout the Vedic literature that the conditioned soul receives a particular body, gives it up, and then accepts another, simply because of his involvement with the modes of nature, karma and samsara. Thus to say that one is participating in the modes of nature is to say that one is accepting particular types of bodies suitable for the particular material qualities one is involved with. An ignorant bystander might have simplistically interpreted Krishna's pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill as follows. The residents of Vrindavana were obliged, by Vedic principles, to make certain offerings to the god of heaven, Indra. Child Krishna, ignoring the position of Indra, usurped these offerings and took them for his own pleasure. In other words, Krishna was what? What is the quality Indra is accusing Krishna of?
Greed.
So the child Krishna saw Indra's getting the offerings, I want some. Right? That's the nature of greed, eh? Yeah? And envy. When I eat with my granddaughter and her family, Nasinga, who's like 1.5, so he sits next to me always, and he always looks at my plate. And if there's something on my plate that looks different than what's on his plate, he fusses until he gets it. So one may think child Krishna is like this. You know, he's looking at Indra's offering, he says, I'm one. Going on, when Indra tried to punish Krishna, his associates, the Lord, frustrated Indra's attempt, humiliated him, and exhausted his pride and resources. But the superficial interpretation is repeated in this verse. Here Lord Indra addresses Sri Krishna as Bhagavan, indicating that he is not an ordinary child, but in fact God. Therefore, Krishna's punishing Indra was part of his mission, protecting religious principles and curbing down the envious. It was not a display of material anger or greed for the offerings meant for Indra. Sri Krishna is pure spiritual existence, and his simple, sublime desire is to engage all living beings in the perfect, blissful life of Krishna consciousness. Krishna's desire to make us Krishna conscious is not egotistical, since ultimately Krishna is everything and Krishna consciousness is objectively the best consciousness. Lord Indra is really a humble servant of Krishna, a fact he is now beginning to remember. Kutam Tade Deva Isha Tak Kutam. I'm getting again messages that there's no sound. Bhavaya ye guru linga bhavaha tadapi dandan bhagavandu varti dharmasya guptai kalanir brahaya. How then could there exist in you the symptoms of an ignorant person, such as greed, lust, anger, and envy, which are produced by one's previous involvement in material existence and which cause one to become further entangled in material existence? And yet is the Supreme Lord who imposed punishment to protect religious principles and curb down the wicked. So I'm going to read just Jiva Goswami's tika on this verse. So this is expressed in Kaimukika Naya. In other words, it's a form of logic. So Jiva Goswami is commenting on the form of logic that Indra is using. If your qualities are not Maya, then what fault is there if you are the cause of Maya? Cause is the Lord, O controller of Maya, Isha. But in the pile of food offered to me, this is Krishna may respond. But in the pile of food offered to me and my intolerance of your pride, you understand that I have material qualities. Why do you now try to conceal those faults? So Krishna is saying, actually, I was prideful and envious. Why are you trying to make it something else? Qualities like greed for food, which has been offered by Jiva Goswami's claim, qualities like greed for food, which has been offered by devotees, qualities which show the greatness of devotees and bhakti, Buddha ling bhava, so he's taking out the ah. Right? And you said ah Buddha ling bhava, the indications of the qualities of ignorance, and here Jiva Goswami says, indications of the qualities of intelligence, are produced by you. They are not made by Maya, but by your mercy alone, Pacham Pushman Pulantwayam, Yome Bhakta Prayajita, Dharam Bhakti Paritam, Ashwami Paritam. I accept that which is offered in devotion from the genuine devotee having pure body and mind, who just gives a leaf, flower, fruit, or waters. So the Christian may respond to this, saying, one can accept that greed since it gives joy to the devotee and suffering to others, but anger gives suffering to a person, since he will get punished. And this also be mercy. And Indra might respond, destroying the wicked in order to protect the devotees is mercy. For because of that punishment, the wicked begin to follow Dharma and then become happy. That also is only mercy. And Jiva Goswami is explaining, Atapi instead of Tatapi is another version. The Lord performs punishment. Though Krishna was present, now this is interesting, though Krishna was present, Indra speaks as if he were absent, by addressing him as Bhagavan out of fear and respect. So he's speaking to Krishna in the third person. Instead of saying you, he's saying Bhagavan. Another version has Manyugo Badaya. This phrase is connected with the phrase Kuto Nu. So here we're looking at Kama Krodha Sitasava, Tasmadetva Plan Twichet, where Krishna says, you should give up lust, anger, and greed. Right? Every sane man should give these up, for they lead to the degradation of the soul. So for conditioned souls, there's this vicious cycle of greed and its effects. Mm-hmm. And so the impersonalists may try to simply become free from this without realizing that there's something transcendentally equivalent in the Supreme that is not mundane. So, Rupa Goswami very nicely explains this relationship of a sinful desire, and then a sinful action, and then gradually the manifestation of that action, which leads to a body, which again leads to the sinful desire. And we all have that experience, right? That we want to do something that we know is not good for us. Whether it's, you know, eating something with a lot of sugar, or, you know, the example in the CBT report is, you know, having some illicit, lusty desire, or whatever. You know, we all have desires for things that are not good for us, right? Yes? And if we indulge in them, that indulgence tends to exacerbate that desire. Isn't it like, you know, you eat one sweet and then you want to eat another sweet and then you want to eat another sweet? And on a macro level, we have some desire to enjoy the world. That desire gives us a material body. The material body inflames the desire to enjoy the world, which then gives us another material body, and so forth and so on and so on. So this is the cycle that Indra's speaking about, that was explained by Srinivas Swami, that the modes of nature cause a body that cause the modes of nature to cause the body that cause the modes of nature to cause the body. And we get stuck in this. We get stuck in this cycle. And even though we don't become very happy in this way, we don't know how to get out. We become entrapped by the modes of nature. Dharyation, Nimayamamamaya, Dharatiya. It becomes very difficult to get out. And everyone has this experience. Everyone. I mean, this is Arjuna asked this question in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. He said, why do we seem forced to do things that we don't really want to do? You know, even if it's just getting annoyed with somebody over some little thing, and then we're like, why did I get annoyed with that? Why wasn't I just tolerant? Yeah? I was counseling one devotee who's really upset about something, and it just didn't matter what I said to her or whatever, she was just stuck in this being upset. And I was thinking, you know, I do that too. I'll get stuck in something. And you get stuck. Yeah, everybody understands what I'm talking about. You just get stuck in some habit, and you get some habit of mind, some habit of emotion, some habit of behavior, where we're under the control of the modes. And even though we're spiritual beings, as Krishna says, right, that the above dull matter is the body, above the body is the mind, above the mind is intelligence, above the intelligence is the soul. We're spiritual beings. We're far superior to these modes of nature. Still, because they're Krishna's energy, once we become entangled in them, we're really stuck. And we act like fools. Again, I don't know, maybe none of you do this, but I do. Right? We come under the influence of tamaguna, rajaguna, even sattvaguna. We act like fools. I don't know why I do that. And we do it again and again and again. So, people may say, well, the way to get free of this, and this is true, this is not untrue, is to be detached. Like Krishna says in 14:22, right? One who does not hate illumination, attachment, or delusion when they appear, nor long for them when they disappear, knowing that the modes alone are active, remaining ever neutral. So this is also a practice of bhakti. It's one of the angas of bhakti given by Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Not to be affected by loss and gain. Krishna emphasizes this so many times in the Bhagavad Gita. To be detached in happiness and distress, pain and infamy, honor and dishonor, happiness and distress. That the material energy is there, but one simply observes it. One doesn't come under its control. Just like we all go to shops where there's things we don't buy because they're not good for our Krishna consciousness, right? We observe them. We're standing at the cashier and we're seeing that there's all the candies and the gossip magazines, and we see that they're there, but we're not affected by them. We just go and we buy our apples. And, yes? So then one becomes like that. One just sees this is the workings of material nature. It's just the workings of the body and the mind, and it has nothing to do with me. We simply observe them. Krishna says, like rivers going into the ocean. So if this is all one does, then one might think that that is the supreme place to be, and that the supreme God, Bhagavan, must be also like that, just in this state of detachment and peace. And so we find that, at least at the present time, particularly it's very prominent, although it's always been there from the beginning of time, this idea that spiritual life is this detached peace only. That's all it is. Right? Brahma-mukti prasanna-atmana sojati. That one is simply happy and not hankering for anything, not lamenting for anything, that one doesn't come under the control of lust, anger, greed, and envy, and things. I mean, we have this kind of stereotype of the you know, the detached, shaky person who's just kind of always like this. And people would be surprised sometimes that Srila Prabhupada wasn't always like that. Yeah. And here, India's surprised that Krishna's not like that. So personalism is above the Brahma Buddha stage. This impersonal stage is not, it's not everything. Yes, bhakti yogis also experience this neutrality toward the material emotions. That's a fact. It's part of the angas of bhakti. It's part of the process of bhakti to become to practice detachment from the material mind and the material emotions. That's part of the practice of bhakti, undoubtedly. But we are doing this by cultivating the spiritual emotions, not just by detachment from the material. We're not like, you know, these monks that just eat bread and soup. You know, that's not our practice. Or we observe a vow of silence. When I was teaching in Radhadesh, one of my students convinced me to watch a 3-hour movie about these European monks who have vows of silence. You see that?
I've seen it.
Yes, 3 hours.
It's excruciating.
Yes, it was excruciating. And it was interesting, this student of mine, she said, I'm so attracted to this. I said, you must have done it in another life. But I wasn't particularly attracted to it. You know, each of the monks is just in their little cell. I have a prison practically, remember this. And when they're working together, they don't speak to each other. You know, they just get food put in a little slot. And they're just like a prison. But one day a week, they would go outside and they would play. It was interesting. They'd go outside and they'd play and then they would talk to each other. But otherwise, you know, all they would do was pray and chant. But it's not like that, like in the Ratiyatra, in the cleaning of the Gundija temple before Ratiyatra, everyone's not silent. They're all saying, Krishna, Krishna, right? When they want a mop, when they want a bucket, whatever, you know. Krishna, Krishna, hare, hare. You know, there's transcendental emotions in the Ratiyatra, these emotions between Jagannath and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they're so extreme, and the emotions of the Lord are so extreme that all his limbs retract and his eyes get very wide, and Mahaprabhu's emotions are so extreme that the tears are spurting out of his eyes like out of a syringe, and he's fainting and having all these symptoms of ecstasy far beyond the sattva bhavas discussed by Rupa Goswami. Right? And here it appears that the Lord is like some ordinary child, envious and angry. Right? Like my little great-grandson who becomes envious of the food that's on my plate and angry when he can't get it. Right? And it's really funny, sometimes I'll have the same food, but if it doesn't look like the same food, he gets upset. It has to look exactly the same. Or he has a royal fit. And, you know, we might think God is like that. You know, that we're projecting that Krishna is an ordinary person, that he's also controlled. We know what it's like to be controlled by lust, anger, and greed. Everybody here knows what's that like. And how embarrassing that is. Right? So we think Krishna's. But with Krishna, it's completely different. Krishna is completely different. So it's just, I'm right now studying the Southern Ocean of the Nectar Devotion. And Rupa Goswami, he describes the 64 qualities of Krishna. Then he describes the different personalities of Krishna, the 4 personalities. And then he goes on to describe more qualities. And in one of the qualities, he's describing Krishna in the Govardhan Lila. And he says that at first when Indra attacked Vrindavan, that Krishna wanted to go to the heavenly planets and destroy all of Swargaloka. He was just going to like destroy all of Indra's opulence. And it's like, oh, you're so insignificant. I don't need to do that. Let me just protect the residents of Vrindavan. Forget about Indra. That he didn't have a mood. In other words, Krishna didn't have a mood of vengeance. That's not It's not where he's coming from. He doesn't have to assert his power by putting somebody down. And that's one of the attributes of Tamagun, very expert in insulting others. Right? Trying, but Krishna doesn't need to do that. Therefore, Indra's addressing him as Bhagavan. You know, he already has everything. And these various, I mean, Indra's a great devotee. But if a devotee messes up or some demon, Krishna doesn't need to do that. Whatever he's doing is actually out of kindness. And this was also explained by Rupa Goswami in his description of the Dhirodhata aspect of Krishna's personality. Right? So of course Krishna's personality is unlimited. Rupa Goswami, after describing the 64 qualities and the four personality types, he said, actually it's unlimited. You can't possibly list all the Krishna's qualities, which is why I find it so funny. He lists 64 qualities and then he says it's unlimited and then he says there's some more. But anyway, these four aspects of Krishna's personality, with the caveat that Krishna's personality is unlimited in scope. So these four aspects are, what are the four aspects of Krishna's personality?
Dhirodhata.
Okay, so Dhirodhata is what?
Dhirodhata.
Dhirodhata. D-A-T-T-A.
Why?
Yeah, Dhirodhata. And that's what? How would we explain that? So this is Krishna as a hero. And this was particularly noted in what pastime? Govardhan Hill. Krishna lived in Govardhan Hill. And this is again what Goswami describes later. That Krishna says, oh, forget about punishing Indra. I'm just going to be a hero to the residents of Vrindavan. I'm going to do something very heroic. That's pretty heroic, right? To lift up a whole mountain. I always think it's so funny that, you know, there's this flood. Like right now, there's floods in Europe. So nobody talks about lifting mountains. You know, they talk about going to higher ground. And Krishna, instead of having everybody like go to the top of Govardhan Hill, he lives Govardhan Hill, has to go under it. And it's such a funny way of dealing with the flood. And, you know, Sudarshan is drawing up the water. So he's a hero. And what incarnation of Krishna is particularly Dhirodhata?
Lord Ram.
Lord Ram. Right, fighting Ravana. And very noble. We think of Dhirodhata is this real noble hero. And again, the fact that Krishna doesn't go after Indra and punish Indra's abode, you know, that's what you would think, right? I was remembering there was a movie I saw when I was a kid called Failsafe, how there was some glitch in the nuclear instructions, and so the American pilots put a nuclear bomb on Moscow by mistake. And so the American president says to the Russian president, in retaliation, you could bomb New York. So that's the normal thing, right? Somebody blows up your city, and you want to blow up their city. So it's like, hey, you're going to destroy your dog, and okay, I'll destroy it. What's the name of your city? So, you know, we'll destroy your city. So, no, you can keep your opulence. I'll just be a hero. So this noble hero. Just like Ramchandra, when he accepted Vibhishan, and the monkeys were complaining, and even Lakshmana was complaining. He said, how can you accept somebody who was disloyal to his brother in a time of crisis? Then who knows what he'll do. But Lord Ramchandra said, if Ravana surrendered, then I would accept it. Now, Krishna doesn't have envy. Or the examples often given after the killing of Jarasandha, where Krishna puts his son in charge. Krishna doesn't take over the kingdom. He's punishing out of kindness only. Right? As Jiva Goswami is saying, he's punishing so a person will come to Dharma. And we see this in our own life. Sometimes Krishna arranges difficulty for us, not because he hates us or because he's envious of us, but to bring us to a proper position. If we use it that way, I mean, we still have to choose how we use it. Ravana never figured it out, right? He never figured out
my, you know, Kumbhakarna's died, all my sons, even Indrajit died, maybe I should surrender. You know, so we always have that option. All right, then next attribute to Krishna's personality we could look at would be what? You want to look at the Dhirtata, okay, because that's the one here we're looking at, the Dhirtata. So this is the bad boy. This is the bad boy. Rupa Goswami says that Krishna wrote a letter to Kalyana saying, you are a frog, and I'm a snake that's going to eat you, frog. I think about Lord Varaha when he's fighting Dharanasha, and he's like, you know, heroes don't talk much. You're just a dog. You know, insulting. Of course, the reason they insult on the battlefield is that makes people angry and gets people to fight. Because even if you're such a hero, when you get on the battlefield, you may be like, hey, I don't really know if I want my left arm cut off. Maybe it isn't worth it, you know. So your enemy comes and goes, you're a dog! Yeah! Just like we tend to do that if somebody insults us, or we think that somebody insults us, you know, then we're ready to fight to the death for the next 10,000 years. So Krishna does that, right? He's this, and the person who also is very dear to God is Bhima. He has this mood. But Rupa Goswami explains that although Dhirodhata is generally not something that we would expect a great personality to do, Krishna's doing that to protect his devotees. You know, we see that as a good quality even materially. You know, if some invader comes to your house and is going to rob you and kidnap your children, you know, if then you become very aggressive and nasty, that's a good thing. And get out of here, you scumbag! How dare you come into my house? So then Krishna takes this attitude to protect these devotees. It's very wonderful. I thought it was critical of Gandhi's, you know, idea of absolute nonviolence, that Gandhi says, you know, even if my daughter is being violated in my presence, I'll remain nonviolent. The Prabhupada said, this is nonsense. So this so-called bad boy aspect of Krishna is also very attractive. And what are the other personality?
Dear Lalita.
Dear Lalita. So Dear Lalita is the party boy, the fun boy. You know, so here he's very submissive to his girlfriends and he's always having fun. He's always joking. And he's very playful. And we even see this in the Govardhan Leela, where Krishna's looking at the rest of the gopis, and so the hills start shaking, and the older members of Vrindavan, they become very worried. And Balaram smiles, thinking they don't have anything to worry about because Krishna can hold up the hill. And Krishna thinks Balaram is smiling because Balaram saw him looking at the rest of the gopis, and Krishna gets very embarrassed. So Krishna's always having fun, and everything he does is fun. Even when Krishna's being a hero, he's having fun. When Krishna's being a bad boy, he's having fun. He's, right, it says with Lord Varaha, when he returns to the spiritual world, there's a party going on all the time. Right, like we have a big sign outside. Every day is a festival. You know, like my daughter does her Bharatanatyam dancing every day. And one devotee complained to her and said, this dancing, this type of dancing is only for festivals. She said, well, there's a sign outside the temple that says, every day is a festival. And then the other aspect of Krishna's personality?
Dear Prasanta.
Dear Prasanta. So Prasanta means very peaceful. Dear Prasanta. This is Krishna as the consummate gentleman. So this is exhibited when Krishna's washing everyone's feet at the Rajasuya Yajna. It's kind of a mood of being a servant. And the other personality who exemplifies this mood is Marashyudhisthira. So Krishna he's a person. He's a person. I was listening this morning to a recording of when Prabhupada arrived in New York in 1975. I was there. You can hear my oldest son screaming in that recording. He was just a few months old, but he was just like, It took us a long time to get to quiet down. And this one reporter is pressing Srila Prabhupada. He said, "When did you realize God?" And Prabhupada says, "God is a person, just like you and I are a person." "Yes, yes, I understand," he says. "So when did you realize God?" And Prabhupada kept saying, "God is a person." It was funny. Prabhupada said that maybe he was 4 or 5 years old, he realized God. But God is a person. He's a person. And as a person, he has personality. And so how could he be under the modes of nature? He's the master of the modes of nature. He says, "The deviation of Maya, I'm a mama Maya direct, it's his Maya. He's not going to be under the master. He's not going to, like you say, the sweet maker is not going to be under the control of his sweets." When I lived in the Chicago temple, the treasurer stole a whole bunch of money from the, remember? He absconded with a lot of money, and so the temple president just had big bags of cash, literally, like big bags of cash in his office, and he was just handing out cash to the devotees who needed it and accepting cash from them. You know, and my husband volunteered to do the treasury, but he had to get the building up to code because the inspectors were coming. And I went into the office and I said, "You know, Sri Ramanujapuru, this is not the way Prabhupada wants us to manage money." He says, "Well, what can I do?" I said, "I'll manage the money. I'll be the treasurer." And he looked at me and he said, "Yeah, the sweet maker is not going to be stealing the sweets because I came from a very wealthy family. So he allowed me to take care of the treasury, which I did for a long time." So Krishna's not going to be, he's not going to be illusioned by his illusions. The magician is not going to be illusioned by his illusions. So this apparent greed, this apparent anger, this apparent lust, this apparent envy, all these apparent qualities that appear in Krishna are all loving and playful and wonderful and for protection. They're not embarrassing. They're not, it's not like what we experience, where we're suffering under these whips of these things, like, "Oh, why did I agree? Why did I get angry? Why did I get envy?" It's not like that. And this is our wonderful philosophy, that God is a person.